We both know he's alive.
But you know where he is.
Halloween 5. This time, they're ready. This time, he's unmasked. And this time, he's back with a vengeance. Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers.
I came in the room. It was Sam Bitterman, Ramsey Thomas, another script developer with them. To my right, in front of me, the desk of Mustafa Akkad, and I sat in front of Mustafa. And Mustafa said, so you received the script? Yes. Did you read it? Yes. What did you think of the script? And I said, Mustafa, would you like to do Halloween 6 one day? And he banged his hand on the desk and said, this is none of your business. Yes, it is. I said, how do you mean? I said, well, if you want Halloween 6 one day, Halloween 5 better be good. He says, what do you think of the script? And I took the script from my bag. I put it on the desk. I looked at it. I looked at the three gentlemen. And I got up. I took the script and I went around the desk and I gently deposited it into his trash can and I came back. Silence in the room.
Jed, are you...
Death has come to your little town. Do you know what Haddonfield is? Families, children, all lined up in rows up and down these streets. You're telling me they're lined up for a slaughterhouse? They could be.
For over 40 years, the Halloween series has thrilled and terrified audiences. From its low-budget origins to spawning a new era of slashers, the franchise remains a cultural touchstone around the world, often referred to as the Gone with the Wind of horror. From the first chilling notes of the iconic score to the final frame, join Joel Brown as we explore the iconic horror series, digging deep into the characters, the storylines, and the spine-chilling scares. Welcome to Talking Shape with Joel Brown, the ultimate podcast for Halloween franchise enthusiasts.
Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers, holds a special place in my heart as a Halloween fanatic. It was the first entry I experienced as a young kid. Ironically, this film was crafted in the year that I came into the world, 1989, making it, spoiler alert, 35 years ago. As we celebrate the 35th anniversary of arguably one of the more divisive films within the franchise, I have the privilege of sitting down with the Swiss-French director who was at the helm, known for his bold choices, introducing supernatural elements, humanizing the iconic shape that is Michael Myers, and bringing us the infamous Man in Black. It's a big warm welcome to Dominique Othanen-Gerard.
Hi, Joel. Very happy to be here.
No, it's nice to finally meet. We've sort of been corresponding on and off from the Christmas point of 2023 going into the new year that is 2024. So I guess, what have we got planned for 2024?
Several projects. One of them is on the family Picard, Bertrand Picard, the great explorer, the one who won the race in Balloon against Richard Branson. His father being the first to go in the sea, on the bottom of the sea, in a submarine that he built himself 1,200 meters down, 1,200. And his grandfather being the first one having passed the stratosphere the first one to have photographed our planet being a circular ball. An exploration on these characters and so on. We are scripting now. It takes time.
35 years on from Halloween 5, Are you surprised by the franchise's longevity? I mean, did you know what you were getting yourself into back in 1989?
I thought that it had a chance when I saw Halloween 4. I thought, okay, it has its identity. From 1 to 4, that was the link for me. 2 and 3, I'm not talking about them. They were a different style of movies. And I said, okay, that's why I got the job, actually. It's because I asked Mustafa, would you like to do Halloween 6 one day? And he banged his hand on the desk and said, this is none of your business. I said, yes, it is. I said, how do you mean? I said, well, if you want Halloween 6 one day, Halloween 5 better be good. And in line with what John Carpenter and Deborah Hill built. And that's how it went.
And you mentioned that there. Was that one of your first meetings with Mustafa Akkad?
The very first meeting.
Do you think he was a little bit off-put by that, potentially?
No, he liked me right away. He was... So I came in the room. There were four gentlemen in the room. There was Sam Bitterman, Ramsey Thomas, another script developer with them, to my right. In front of me, the desk of Mustafa Akkad, and I sat in front of Mustafa. And hello, how are you? I don't know. I meet these guys, and I feel a little bit, shy or in a sort of interrogation room style. And Mustafa said, "So, you received the script? Yes. Did you read it? Yes. What did you think of the script?" And I said, "Mustafa, would you like to do Halloween 6 one day?" And that's why he was offended. But he was not angry at me. He was just like surprised. And I said, I'm responsible. So he says, what do you think of the script? And I took the script from my bag. I put it on the desk. I looked at it. I looked at the three gentlemen. And I got up. I took the script and I went around the desk and I gently deposited it into his trash can, and I came back. Silence in the room. I mean, heavy silence. And Mustafa looks at me. The three guys, I cannot lift my eyes towards them because they are shooting at me anger and rage. And I said, Mustafa, you've got three series on the market today that are battling for sequels. And you need to keep the identity of Halloween 5. You've got Friday the 13th, it's body count, and it's how they kill the young kids, and it's gory. That's fun. You've got Nightmare on Elm Street, which is the dreamland, which is he attacks where you don't expect him. Surprise. And that's an identity. And Halloween, you've got Hitchcockian suspense. You've got characters that you like. You have to live with them. It's very few characters that get killed, but he's unjust. He's the boogeyman. He's the man in the dark. You don't expect him. And it is not gory. It's quick kills, but it's frankly unjust. And it has to deal with the feeling guilty of having pleasure with discovering sexual pleasure for the first time. This is important in Halloween. And he looks at me and says, so what do you think you're going to do? I said, your script doesn't have that. It has the body count. You have a bus load of people that Michael Myers drives up the hill. You've got nightmares where he hits people in nightmares. You've got a mix of the three genres. You've got to go back to building characters and being simple. And so, are you going to rewrite the script with Sam Bitterman? I said, no, I can't. Did you allow me? He says, what? I got up. I went to the door of the office. I opened the door. I said, Bob, can you come in? Bob came in. Mustafa and the three guys were like, what the fuck are you doing, this guy? And I sat with Bob and I looked at Bob. And we were facing each other and I said, okay, we've got a girl who committed a horrendous crime against her mother, trying to stab her in the shower. We've got these elements. I don't think the girl is guilty, because if she's evil, it's going to take away from Michael Myers' power, his almighty evil power. So how are we going to go about it? And we talked for 15 minutes with Bob in front of Mustafa, until Mustafa slammed his desk with his hands and said, okay, I've got enough, everyone out of my office. Without saying goodbye and so on, everyone out, 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 out. So we went out with Bob earlier, before the three other gentlemen, you know, running away not to get caught up with them, you know, because we did such a stunt. And Bob said, you're totally crazy. You're mad, Dominique. That's it. You're never going to get it. And 2 hours later, my agent calls me and says, you got it. But Bob refuses, because Bob doesn't want to eat dirt. The salary was not good. You got an appointment tomorrow with Mustafa? Okay, 10 o'clock. All right. And I go the next day to Mustafa and say, okay, Dominique, your writer doesn't work for us or so. You're going to write with Shem Bitterman, the original, now. It's settled. I said, excuse me, can I, Mustafa? And I do the same thing again. I go to the door. I said, Michael, come in. And Michael Jacobs comes in. And I go in. And with Michael, we click. There's something going on in our conversation. We do the same thing. Mustafa is alone in his office this day. No, there was Ramsey Thomas, I believe. And that's it. We started writing with Michael.
And do you think you got the job because you sort of were willing to kind of, you kind of put Mustafa on the spot a little bit? You kind of, maybe he hasn't had anyone kind of act like that towards him about, like, in that type of situation, and he maybe like saw something in you potentially.
I believe I got the job because I had nothing to lose, first of all.
Yeah.
I took all risk. I didn't care. Do I do the movie or not? Yes, I wanted to do the movie. I thought it was impossible to do the movie with the script that I got. It was impossible. I had the hardest time reading the script. It went in all directions. And I felt, this is a catastrophe. So I went to rent all the films I could during the weekend. I got the script on Friday. And I rented a Blockbuster that existed at the time, you know, on VHS. Friday the 13th, Halloween, and of course, Nightmare on Elm Street. And I was looking at them and thinking about them, thinking about the film. And so I was prepared, not with the analysis of their script, but more on where is Halloween on the marketplace. What's its potential growth, basically?
Is it true, the story that we hear, that it was actually Deborah Hill that recommended you to Mustafa after you two met back in 1988 at the Sundance Film Festival? That's true?
Correct. Absolutely. We hit it off with Deborah. She didn't know who I was. I didn't know who she was. And it's just person to person. We laughed. We met and we talked. And she discovered I was a filmmaker. And she wanted to see one of my films, Piège à Flic, and she thought it was totally outrageous. It was amazing. She loved it and so on. And she revealed to me that she was a producer and that she did Halloween. And she said, you know, I think they're looking for a director. They may have someone, but let me call Mustafa. Would you like to do Halloween? I said, well, I just came back out of Night Angel, which is a horror film. Yeah, I like the genre. I just learned everything about the genre, and I told her what I've learned in order to satisfy the target audience. You know, what are the fun things for an audience? And she was convinced. So she called, and I got the appointment. And I was certainly not the only one on the line, but I just went. It went very fast, actually.
What was your take on Deborah Hill when you just met her? You just met her there at this festival, didn't think much of it. But I mean, did she have a bit of a presence about her, or like you said that you hit it off? Like some would say it's an X factor. What could you say it was about Deborah Hill when meeting her?
She was wonderful. She's such a clear-minded person. She's such a beautiful heart. Actually, we remained friends very much, very long. She accompanied the film, knowing that Mustafa was interested. I'm sure that they talked together, and she didn't tell me very much about this. But with Michael, we had a slant. We said, okay, how can Jamie be thing like this at the end of us? Halloween 4, trying to kill her mother. What happened there? And we thought, all right. And Michael said, referring to Laura Mars, The Eyes of Laura Mars, this famous film, horror films, where the character is blind but sees telepathically. Let's use that trick onto Jamie. She's linked to Michael Myers. She acted because of his telepathic powers. And right now, she's able to see through his eyes when he gets excited or close to a kill. And Deborah said, whoa, be careful. There you're going into a realm that is not quite Halloween. You're introducing something very special to the dimension of Halloween. And we talked about it. We worked with Deborah. She knows Halloween inside out. She's an intelligent producer. She's a great pitcher. And she followed the script. She gave notes and so on. That was fantastic. We were guided by her somehow, kept us on the track of what Halloween is about.
As the rumors and stories out there go, once production did start, I mean, it was a rushed production. I think Mustafa had a deal with the theaters. You know, he had money up front. If he could release another Halloween movie in October, he'll get X amount of dollars up front. I mean, in hindsight, I mean, was that probably not a mistake, but it just put unnecessary pressure on a production and, you know, like a young director as yourself, or did you see that as a challenge?
To me, it was amusing. Come on. You're in Hollywood. You get to do a movie. Two good things. Come on. It's fantastic. You just go with it, you know. You're not thinking of making the best movie of the world or so. You are making the number five of a series of movies. And if yours is standing right, there will be more. So there's no illusion of creating, you know, the movie of my life. But so we had 6 weeks to write the script. Something ridiculous. You know, it was a brand new script, I tell you. We didn't keep a single scene from Shem's script. He's still on the credits because Mustafa said, come on, this guy worked for a year. I want you to accept that he's on the credits. So he got some residuals and so on from the WGA. That's fine. I don't care. But prep was also 6 weeks. We had to prep. It was crazy rushing. And yes, the script was still worked on while I was starting to shoot. And we had differences with Mustafa. He saw things. He liked me a lot. He gave me a lot of respect. I liked him too. An older gentleman, you know, sort of very set in his own ways and so on. And we hit it off extremely well. He always loved when the director is butting heads against the line producer, Rick Nathanson. And Mustafa is the big manipulator on top of us, playing us, asking me for the best things, asking Rick to keep it under budget. And of course, there was tension between Rick and I. We hit it off also pretty well, actually, but it was, you know, sort of a It was tough because I'm clearly demanding and know where the film needs to go. When I set pieces, there's some very important set pieces. Let's take the farm, for example, where the farmland, there's the barn scene, the interior of the house where the kids are having their parties. Then in the barn, you have that little cat. Cat costs money. It may not look like it, but you know, you have to have a cat wrangler and so on. It's a little girl of 11 years old who was handling the cats for us. Then there's a kill. So photography in a barn, it's huge. The exteriors are huge. So you need more lights, you need more stuff. Actually, then we want to have a car race through pine tree forest, and they need to brake in front of the car. Of course they don't brake in front of the car. You need to rig the pine trees. That's prep, that's special effects, and so on. And we the car was getting bogged down and so on. We had to lift the car back up, and there's a kid, like the two young kids in there. You can't shoot all night long with young kids. So we need several nights. So and then the car crash against a tree and so on, and it goes on and on and on. So it was like I was demanding these things. Mustafa was on my side because he wanted them in his film, and he saw I knew how to manipulate all these elements and put it together to make a good scene, suspense scenes and so on. And Rick was pulling his hair out because he says, you know, you can't have all of this, Dominique. We don't have the budget for it.
Fans, you know, can make complaints about a movie, but on a production, yeah, you know, like certain things change or you have to do a certain thing a certain way because that's you haven't got the money to do it the other way, for example. The business side behind making a movie, that there's so much that goes into it that, I mean, people don't, you know, couldn't comprehend unless you're kind of in it, right?
Correct, correct. I have to say, excuse me, fans, for disrespecting the size of the house of Michael Myers from the first movie. Definitely. I took a stand there, knowingly. He was not in the same house. I created a new house. I needed it. I needed it for the whole end of the movie. I couldn't play in that one-story high house or so, all of this big ending of the movie. I needed it as a visual component, as a living thing. It was a character. It became a character. There's the laundry chute. There's the cobweb. There's all the windows. There's the whole atmospheric feel of the house with the cops being on top, throwing a cop out of the window. You know, so many happenings, so many scenes. The loneliness of Loomis searching for Michael, tantalizing, you know, making Michael come alone there, getting rid of the cops and so on. In that little house, original house, I couldn't do it. It would look really cheap. It wouldn't. So I knowingly disrespected some elements of the original Halloween. And, you know, it was for the fun of the ride of the film Halloween 5. You need to make it successful. So somehow the fans enjoy all of these scenes. We had concept on lighting, for example, that the first Halloween did not have at all. We started with daylight scenes, pastel colors, very sweet, the girls talking about the parties, about, you know, being in love, you know, setting all this up after the opening of the film. And we ride with little scares. A dog is a scare, a little things like this, but nothing big and dangerous. And more we get into the movies, that's why in the audience, in the theaters, for all this beginning of the movie, you have rows of girls, you know, 15 to 17 years old girls, rows of boys behind them, and they shake the seats of the girl as soon as there's a little fright. You know, that's the fun thing, and the popcorns go fly in the theaters, and that's fun. And then we get into more scary things. We start to build the movie in a crescendo of tension, of real scare. And that's what the New York critic said. They said Dominique touched two real boogeyman scare of the black. How did he do it, and so on? That's why we had this huge critic, which normally New Yorker, the New York Times, does not give critics to sequels because they're not worth it. But they wrote one. We went into a color scheme which is black and gold, two colors, high contrast. All the house was just a little bit of gold lighting on black backgrounds. And that sort of is different than Halloween 1 and all the Halloween 4. It doesn't have this kind of, visual journey for the whole movie to make the audience feel and enter. That's when in the theater, the theater start to smell perspiration. In the theater, the boys are behind their big cans of popcorns, scared. And the girls watch the movies, and there's a silence, total silence in the theater. And you have that perspiration smell that is weird, that is like, you know, adrenaline having pumped into. And I was smelling the theaters, and then, my God, something is transforming. That's real scare. That's the smell of scare, basically. It's a roller coaster ride. That's how I see it, really. You are in that little car, and now you're not anymore in control. That's it. You put the belt on and so on, and the little car is going extremely slowly on a flat part, and then it starts to rise. And it goes up the hill, it goes up the hill, it goes up the hill, and you're laughing, and you say, oh, this is nothing, and so on at all. And then it stops on top of the hill. It's very... And then you start to say, what the fuck? I'm so high here. What is going to happen now? And that's it. It goes. Your stomach comes into your mouth because it sort of flies down. And then it goes around and it do a few turns and so on. And then you're back to normal, quiet, but excited. And now you have to do the end. You know, you've got to push for something even stronger.
Make sure to check out season one of Talking Shape. Interviews and insights with the actors behind the famous White Mask, including James Jude Courtney from David Gordon Green's trilogy.
Certainly there are people, you know, stunt guys who have played various roles and just put on a mask, but they don't sell that well. The basic studio exec, legal, business affairs, publicity, just put a mask on a stuntman. Well, that's spoken by men and women who could never do it themselves, who have no concept of what it means to do that. You know, it's like somebody who's never had sex going, oh, yeah, all you do is, oh, really? yeah, okay. Well, why don't you try it one time, motherfucker, and then we'll see what you do.
Brad Lorre from Halloween Resurrection.
He's like the godfather of the whole franchise. You know, I stayed away from him, but I didn't impose on him except for one time I went up to him and I said, you know, Mr. God, I just want to tell you that I'm not a big horror fan. But the only reason I took this job is because I'm such a huge fan of the Halloween series, especially the first one. And he put his hat on my face. He said, it would have been just that much better if you'd been in it. And I thought, what a sweetheart. What a very kind thing. It just made my, it just made my day.
And Chris Durand from Halloween 20 years later.
One of the discussions we had early on was whether or not to have the mask untucked or tucked into the turtleneck. And to me, if the mask is untucked, I want to reach out and lift it up and see who's under the mask. What that means is that there's somebody under the mask. It's tucked in, it blurs the line between it somebody wearing a mask or him being his own entity. So it kind of gives it that extra little step of he's a little bit of this supernatural entity, not just some guy.
Talking Shape, Season 1. Now available wherever you stream your podcasts.
Talking a bit more about the production of Halloween 5 and not to sort of harp on it or the back and forth with you and Mustafa, the opening scene, you originally shoot an original scene where we have Dr. Death, which fans have recently seen since the footage has been released. And I believe Mustafa, he didn't like the original open that you had filmed. So there was a reshoot with the old man.
Quiet, Spooky. Be quiet.
It went that way. We took the beginning of the film from Halloween 4.
Yeah.
Michael Myers is being shot by the sheriff and falls into a sort of a mine. And in that mine, there is a tunnel that sort of leads him to get to a river, and they send explosive into the mine, and through the river, he's being transported to a sort of a bridge, and then he gets into a hermit who takes care of him for a year until he wakes back up. And so we talked a lot with Mustafa, but with the scriptwriter and with Deborah, we thought he is an isolated man because he's unlinked to civilization. Not to know who this masked guy is, to keep him alive for a year. Why would he do this? Why wouldn't he call the police? Why wouldn't he call the hospital? What? How come? So I said, he's an isolated man. You giving me the fact that he needs to stay a year there to make it credible. So he's a hermit. He's a guy who has no link with society. And I casted a young man, an innocent man, who was thin like my little finger. I mean, so thin, so beautiful actor. But, you know, it was skin on bones. And I thought that was very special. And I liked that. And Mustafa said, Dominique, I prefer to be an old man, because an old man, if Michael kills an old man at the beginning of the movie, we're going to feel more for the people. It's more unjust to kill an old man than a young man. I said, really? That's maybe a subjective view. It may not be, say, yeah, he needs to be an old man. That's okay. But can I shoot him with the young guy? You know, don't you like? He says, yeah, I like it. Yeah. But, you know, I think, you know, man would be better. And so we went on to shoot it so well. And the scene is amazing. I mean, Rob Draper, the director of photography, is great. And Brent Swift did such an amazing set piece with full of bones and antlers in this cabin in wood shack. And Mustafa looked at it and said, you know, I don't feel sympathy for this character, Dominic. I'd like to replace him with an old man. I said, oh, Mustafa. And he says this while I'm shooting the film in the middle of production. Mustafa, I don't have the time to shoot it. So we had our teams who were totally on my side, because we all liked the scene with the young hermit, destroy the set and everything for them not to be able to shoot. And Thomas went to shoot it with the second unit with three lights and so on. And he shot five shots of the old man with this parrot, talking to the parrot. And in the edit, we have all my shots and those five shots with the thing. And I said, Mustafa, you're just crazy. And well, you know, that's a lost battle, but I won the war, basically, you know.
And I guess if we did keep the young hermit, or the Dr. Death, which I think he's been called in recent years, that would have created a little bit more, I guess you could say, continuity, in the sense that he's the one that put the thorn tattoo on Michael. I kind of feel that would have made more sense, right?
Especially that I put that sort of tattoo in his place as well as in the old house and so on, you know. That was a surprise coming on to us. Mustafa, we were about halfway through the shoot. He says, I need to introduce a character. I said, oh, really? Yeah, because I want to change the end. I said, oh, really? Come, Mustafa. It's not going to work, Mustafa. Ah, yeah. You know, it's this character and you need to introduce him wherever you can. Dominic, write him in. Who is this character, Mustafa? What are we going to do with this man in black? So it became the Man in Black because I created the Man in Black, but Mustafa had no idea. He says, yeah, he frees Michael from jail. I said, why? You end up with Michael, with Loomis, you know, hitting Michael to death and falling and dying in front of Michael. That's going to be really strong. You don't need more. One more scene. Ah. So Jamie is there. She's alive. And that was my, you know, I don't know if in the script we had one more scene after this, but he says, no, I need him for Halloween 6. I have some ideas for Halloween 6. I said, what? And, you know, when you're in, we had also 6 weeks to shoot the film. It's extremely tight, the shooting schedule, with the number of special effects, with the little girl. You know, Jamie is in great many scenes, and her boyfriend also. You don't have the time to rewrite a new script or envision the next Halloween. What is going to be the impact, the consequences of introducing a character in Halloween 5 onto the next ones? Because, you know, he's going to have other script writers, and they're going to anyway throw your idea away to create their own stuff. So I chose to leave it open, not to give too many for the next bunch of writers and directors specifics. But I thought we need to link him to Michael to make it mysterious. So the rune that I tattooed on Michael's wrist, that I tattooed on his wrist, and that I tattooed in the house was a simple visual way of saying there is either a sect, either this man is as evil as Michael, and we're going to discover that there's a twin evil thing. They can take that road. They can take the route of Michael having had other things, maybe just a brotherhood. He loaded that on me while shooting, and I tried to say, okay, we are in the next year. Let's get the... And this Man in Black was played with probably five crew members because we had the costume, and we didn't have an extra there with us because we invented him. Say, oh, I'm doing the shot in the outside. Let's do another shot with the Man in Black. Let's do a shot. You know, we sort of included him into our shooting schedule without being able to add a day for him or so. And then we shot the end scene in the jail where he killed everybody else. Because if he killed everybody, it means he's also evil somehow. So where is the source of evil? It was a questioning thing, you know.
Mustafa gives that to you. You're basically told to make it as vague and as open as possible. But if you could have a little bit more of a definitive direction where that character could have gone, where would you have gone? Say, for example, you're on board for Halloween 6. Let's just hypothetically. But where would that character go? Who would it be, in your opinion?
Mustafa did not ask me to keep it vague. He says, do something, but introduce me a character so that he frees Michael from jail. That's all he said. I chose to make a link with Michael and to keep it really open-ended. We thought of a origin of the evilness of Michael. We thought that could be a link to understand the psychology of Michael. Why is he so evil? Because in our movie, we have a line from Michael Jacobs. He belongs to hell, but hell doesn't want him, you know.
I prayed that he would burn in hell, but in my heart, I knew that hell would not have him.
It's a great line from Michael, the scriptwriter. And it is about the evilness of Michael, trying to explain the evilness. So he has a link to some possible explanation. And now we didn't go further as to how it happened and so on.
And is it true that initially, after the first cut of the film, it was going to get an X rating, and there was a bit of a panic about making sure that it wasn't an X, so it could be an R, so it could be distributed at the theaters?
Because of Jamie. Several scenes. The laundry shoot. They cut four shots from the laundry shoot, I tell you. With these four shots, it was so fantastic. But, you know, this is the game. He stabs Jamie's leg through the laundry chute. He hits her calf and you know, censorship says you can't have that. And when she falls, when she's holding on, he opens the door and you see her looking at him in the laundry chute. And then we have her from his point of view, and she goes away inside the dark of this laundry chute. You know, that shot was cut out. They thought it was too scary. And they've cut out several shots also in the attic when Michael comes and she lays into the coffin and so on. These are, again, set pieces, laundry chute, attic, that are unusual because of the lighting, because of the candles, because of a little girl going into a coffin by herself. You know, this is crazy. Who would think of such a horrible thing? So we had to battle to keep that scene because I said it's making Michael emotional. We reveal his humanity. Without humanity, he cannot be evil. That's the thing. When you think of dictators, there are Idi Amin Dada, the dictator in Rwanda, who is the sole responsible for millions of deaths, was a funny, jolly guy on one side. And as soon as your back is turned, he's the horrible killer, massacre, cruel. I mean, so cruel you cannot imagine. So when I look at evil in life, when it is presented to us in front of our eyes or so, I say we need to have a side of Michael that is human. Otherwise, he's just a piece of wood. And I don't want just a piece of wood we don't know anything about. So Mustafa actually agreed with the fact of showing the eye and Michael having a tear. He has an emotion. He feels for something.
Humanizing of Michael Myers. Some people liked it, some people didn't. And I kind of bring the connection to, well, let's go right back to the start of the original Halloween. It was a six-year-old boy. Up until six, there had to be a human there, right? So you're expanding that, you know, there definitely is a human side. Like you said, to be evil, there had to be human. And I kind of like that link that you made there. And speaking of Michael Myers, the actor playing Michael Myers, Don Shanks, he would don the famous white mask. He has the funny story of the audition to be Michael Myers. He thought he was just going to be doing stunts on the film. And I believe he meets you. And I believe you said to him, I want you to walk like wood through water. And Don has famously said he wasn't sure what that was. He just walked and you were very happy with it. Can you tell me how does one walk like wood through water?
You know, directing actors, you need to give them simple directions, but away from the immediate relation to the scene. And something that puzzles them so that they are creative themselves. While they're doing it, they're thinking of something. And this is a director's trick, if you want. So I don't know what would walking like wood through water is really. I can have an image of that, but I want him to be puzzled and to go like this. I love Don Shanks. He was fantastic. What he brought to us, he brought to the film, his kindness of the character to the set and to Danielle Harris and so on. You know, he was just wonderful. And he went all the way through in the movie. I mean, some really tough things. The water scene in the river, my God, poor guy. The slamming the car on the tree. He really gave it all. I love the fact that he's a Native American Indian. That I wanted to film that in his eye, and you feel a little bit of it. You know, it gives some mystery. What I thought was remarkable was his standing, his respect, his. For me, it gave something very special to the way he walked, the way he presented himself. It is a real role for a real actor, and I didn't want to stunt man only. Of course, it had to be an actor that could do stunts or so. But for me, I wanted humanity. That's why we transformed the mask with Greg Nicotero and Howard, the whole K&B team. So fantastic, them working on the mask and saying, no, Dominic, let's make it more human. It's horrible. I said, oh, you really? Oh, yeah, you're right. It's horrible, the mask of Halloween 4. It's terrible. Let's do something more interesting. They opened my eyes to this and so on. And we went to, it was the whole thing. So casting, mask, gestures. You know, we worked on the simplifying of the gesture of Michael Myers for his slashing, for his, you know, all the kills were extremely choreographed. It was not like, now you grab Tina and you kill her. No, how do you take her? Which arm? How do you make the gesture? All of it was worked on with Don.
Part 2, with Dominique Othenin-Girard.
And then on the set, he wanted to be the good guy. And I said, no, you're going to be tough with it, Jamie. You are out of your wits. You are so, it's tough. We sat, both of us, quite in front of the theater, and she looked at the first few minutes of the film with me, and she got scared. She's such a good girl, Rachel. She was such the emblematic, perfect Americana, Midwestern Americana, good girl, that her innocence had to be punished. The freedom Mustafa Akkad gave me was very precious. He accompanied me. When I said I can't work with Rob Draper anymore, Mustafa said immediately, change him. Let's fire him, Dominic. And I said, what? Really? Yeah. You need to be comfortable with your DP. And okay. And Rob was fired.
Thank you for listening to Talking Shape, the ultimate Halloween franchise podcast created by the fans. Make sure to stay up to date with the latest episodes by following Talking Shape on Twitter @talking_shape and liking us on Facebook. Feel free to give us a review on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. We appreciate your support. Until next time.
Go home. Go home.